Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
As we record this program on Thursday, 13 New Yorkers have now tested positive for COVID-19, the novel coronavirus that is spreading across the globe. Meanwhile, Governor Andrew Cuomo updated members of the press this week and said the number of cases will increase. More from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
Governor Cuomo held press briefings on the spread of coronavirus in New York, providing updates on those who have tested positive for the disease. A 39-year-old woman from New York City who recently tested positive for coronavirus after returning from Iran is reportedly recovering well. Her husband is negative for the virus, though New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said Wednesday the husband's case is being treated as a positive. At the state capitol, Governor Cuomo and Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker detailed 5 additional confirmed cases. A 50-year-old attorney who lives in New Rochelle and Westchester County tested positive for the virus and remains hospitalized in stable condition. His wife, who works with her husband at the same Manhattan law firm, 20-year-old son, and 14-year-old daughter also tested positive, as did their neighbor who originally drove the man to the doctor. They are all at home under quarantine. Yeshiva University, where the son attends college, and the SAR school, where the daughter attends high school, are closed, along with the SAR elementary school, as well as the synagogue the family attends. Testing of individuals and coworkers close to those who have tested positive is ongoing. By Wednesday afternoon, 5 more cases were confirmed. The new cases were related to the Westchester County attorney. A friend, his wife, 2 of their 3 sons, and their daughter tested positive. All are home in quarantine. But in giving the information, the officials urged the public not to worry. Here's Governor Cuomo during his first press conference Wednesday morning.
We have an epidemic caused by coronavirus, but we have a pandemic that is caused by fear.
Individuals tested for COVID-19 in Buffalo, Oneida, and Suffolk counties were negative. The governor said 80% of people who contract the new coronavirus may not even show symptoms. He said it is the elderly and those with compromised immune systems who are at most at risk.
What we're worried about, nursing home setting, senior care setting. That's what we've seen in places, other places, and that's where the situation is most problematic. And if you look at what's even happening here in New York, it confirms that.
As an additional precaution, Cuomo announced that 300 SUNY and CUNY students and faculty traveling abroad in countries experiencing COVID-19 outbreaks, China, Iran, Italy, Japan, and South Korea, have been recalled and will fly home by chartered plane to be quarantined in a dormitory setting. Health Commissioner Howard Zucker also addressed the public worry.
There are a lot of people out there who have a sniffle or a cough. And they think that they have coronavirus, and it's really important to alleviate some of those worries or fears. They may just have a cold, regular cold. And there are criteria that have been put forth regarding the travel of those who are coming back to the United States. Individuals who are sick and symptomatic should talk to their healthcare professional and find out, because they may have either an underlying reason for having that cough or that symptom.
Westchester County Executive George Latimer repeated the governor's concerns about the spread of fear.
We do ourselves injustice by letting speculation run faster than facts and medical professionalism.
Cuomo warned that there will be more cases.
It will be dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens at a minimum. So that's why, don't confuse the two concepts. We're investigating every case, but they're going to be dozens and dozens.
Earlier this week, Cuomo signed a $40 million emergency funding bill to support the state's response. Also Wednesday, lawmakers in Washington agreed on an $8.3 billion coronavirus response bill. House Appropriations Chair Nita Lowey spoke with reporters before a scheduled vote on the bill.
Let's hope that this funding, along with the public listening to the advice of our public health leaders, the spread of this virus will be slow. But if not, if unfortunately it picks up speed, House Democrats are not going to hesitate to meet the public health threat.
Lowy is a Democrat from New York's 17th District, just north of New Rochelle.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, big story, of course, the coronavirus. Let's start there. We just heard an update from our Lucas Willard on the program, but you also spoke with Blair Horner, the New York Public Interest Research Group, this week about the politics surrounding something like this and the if it happens on your watch, do you get blamed for it? And, of course, you also discussed about how the governor has been handling the situation here in New York.
Well, I think the governor gets great points for what he's done. As you know, David, I'm not afraid of criticizing this governor. And he has certainly said that again and again about my criticism. And yet, I think he's been exemplary. He's been out there. He knows that he will be judged by what's happening here and what he's doing. In California, Governor Newsom has declared an emergency. In New York State, this virus is going to be spreading. There are people in New York City who live at very close quarters who are going to be affected by this, and this governor knows it. If it happens on your watch to some degree, even if it's unjustified, you are held responsible. I suspect that's why President Trump has put it on Vice President Pence and basically a committee, because he knows full well it is happening, as is the stock market, on his watch. And these are things of great concern to him and his prospects for re-election, which right now I don't think are looking that good. Nevertheless, governors, too, understand that if they are not activists in this worst crisis that we have faced in a long, long time, that they're out of there. And this governor will be looking for a fourth term, at least that's what he told me, and we'll see whether he does that or not. It'll be interesting to see, for example, if Joe Biden, the governor's good friend, is elected president, whether Cuomo will be offered a spot in his cabinet and go. Fourth terms, as his father found out, are not easy to win. People get tired, they walk away. I think Cuomo is doing extremely well. He's being a big activist, and his chances of winning, I think, are good, because it's doubtful to me that the Republicans have the horses to put up against them. On the other hand, George Pataki, who was a no one, a who-he, beat Mario Cuomo. But that was in 94, a year when Republicans were on the move.
Alan, you spoke with Blair Horner. He's the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group about something called the Environmental Bond Act. The state wants to borrow $3 billion for climate change and the money to go and protect the climate. The legislature has to vote for that, and then it would go before the voters in November. You talked about whether it was good. He said yes, but then who pays for it? Where does the money go?
Well, David, if you spend billions of dollars in an environmental bond act, you're basically borrowing that money. We know that this governor is $6 billion in the hole in terms of his budget. So the more you can put on bond acts, the better. Now, the question is whether money that would ordinarily go from the government to support environmental causes will now be shifted to the bond act, taking the onus off the governor to come up with the money. If it's going to be that, I think a lot of people are going to have questions. And the government is supposed to live within its limits. This is a governor who has told localities and others that they can't raise taxes beyond a very small amount. And yet this does seem to be a precipitous foray into taking money basically away from the budgetary process and into even more borrowing. That will cause some consternation. Now, I'm all for the Environmental Bond Act, but my own feeling is it ought to be used for cleaning up things, for restoring areas which have been endangered, not for doing the basic work that we pay our taxes to, and I live in Massachusetts, but trust me, I pay a lot of taxes to New York State because I work in New York. So I think taxpayers have to be aware.
Blair suggested the oil company should pay.
Yeah, sure. I love Blair Horner. He is one of the great people of all times. I mean it. He is so smart, and he is so bright. He works for NYPERG. NYPERG is a very liberal organization, let's put it that way. And to say, it should be paid for by the oil companies is something I certainly agree with. But as I often have said, David, that ain't going to happen.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The leader of the New York State Senate says it's likely that changes will soon be made to the state's new bail reform laws, which end most forms of cash bail for nonviolent offenses. Meanwhile, the state's chief judge also called for amendments to the laws. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says a proposal in the Senate would end all cash bail, even for violent offenses. In exchange, judges would have more discretion to detain potentially dangerous defendants. Since the law took effect on January 1, law enforcement groups have highlighted select cases of repeat offenders going free under the new rules. Some Democratic senators in more conservative districts have expressed concern. But Stewart-Cousins, who spoke at an event at the Albany Times Union Hearst Media Center, says don't call the proposal a rollback of the laws. She says it can even be viewed as enhancing them.
It is not a rollback. If it's anything, it would be a rollback on cash bail.
She says judges will have a set list of criteria on which to make their decisions.
There's going to be limited discretion with guardrails.
Judges would be allowed to consider factors like whether the defendant poses a flight risk. But she says judges will not be given complete discretion because New York could then slide back to what she says was the inequitable system that existed before the bail reform laws took effect.
So it's not like, have a feeling that you should be in jail. No.
Stewart-Cousins, the first African-American woman and first woman to lead the Senate, defends the original law. She says most of the people who could not meet bail and were forced to spend weeks and even months in jail were black and brown, while wealthier white people have always gone free. And she said some of the cases highlighted by law enforcement have been fear-mongering. Meanwhile, the state's top judge, Court of Appeals Chief Judge Janet DeFiore, is also weighing in support of giving the judges more discretion. In her annual State of the Judiciary speech, DeFiore praised the bail reform laws, saying the old rules disproportionately harm those who could not afford to meet bail. But she says there have been some unanticipated consequences, and she says they need to be fixed.
I believe that without compromising the purity of its purpose, the new legislation can be amended and strengthened to recognize a narrow exception allowing judges, after a full and fair adversarial hearing, to detain a defendant in those few and extraordinary cases where such a credible threat exists.
DeFiore says judges in New York City in recent years have already begun setting bail more sparingly, from 48% of cases in 1990 to 23% in 2018. Governor Cuomo says he also thinks there should be some tweaks to the law as part of the budget.
I have no doubt that there are consequences from that reform that will require additional reforms. And we will be making them.
Assembly Democrats remain the lone holdout. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, who championed the bail reform laws last year, says he still wants more data before reversing any of its provisions. He says a report by the NYPD saying that crime spiked in January is in dispute, and he says 1 month's worth of numbers is not enough to go on.
I'm a statistics major. That's my undergraduate degree. 1 month's worth of statistics is not enough of a sample size to tell whether it's a spike, a trend, or a momentary happening.
Lawmakers have about a month before the budget's due to make a final decision. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Two Democratic state lawmakers from the Capital Region are introducing new legislation to ban the burning of substances containing PFAS chemicals. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
A federal lawsuit filed 2 weeks ago claims the Department of Defense did not complete an appropriate environmental review before burning PFAS-laden firefighting foam in 2018 and 2019 at sites including Norlite in Cohoes in Albany County. 108th District Assemblyman John McDonald, a former mayor of Cohoes, says he's dealt with Norlite for some 21 years. He notes that on February 25th, New York State Department of Environmental Conservation officials met with Democratic Mayor Bill Keeler. A day later, officials from surrounding communities met with the company's CEO.
The problem is this. We just don't know how safe incineration would be. Matter of fact, there are many people, many organizations that feel that it is dangerous to the public health.
Right now, Norlite's kilns are shut down for upgrades, and the company wants to resume incineration at some point. McDonald and State Senator Neil Breslin of the 44th District introduced legislation Monday to prohibit the incineration of toxic firefighting foam that contains PFAS chemicals. Here's Breslin.
I can understand a company relying on the federal government, but get used to it. We can't rely on the federal government. We have to make sure that we protect our citizens by ourselves through investigation by DEC, and DEC to me does an extraordinarily good job. And we're not blaming at this point Norlite. They're dealing with the federal government and sent a contract. So it's up to us before there's any evidence to make sure that we are not going to jeopardize the health, safety, and well-being of any citizens in Colony, Cohoes, and in particular those close to the Norlite facility.
Breslin says about 70 families live in Norlite's shadow. Mayor Keeler.
Norlite is not a chocolate factory. They burn hazardous materials daily. That's the fuel they use. This stuff is even nastier. The science is out on it. So, you know, we need some settled science on this before they do testing in Cohoes. But, you know, my bigger question, my earlier question before this the latest thing with Norlite broke was if and how we can resettle these people.
Again, Assemblyman McDonald.
What has been amazing to me during this whole process is that the federal government, the Department of Defense, awards a contract when its own sister agency, the EPA, has no idea on the impact and has not regulated or moved to regulate this chemical. Many people have been critical of Norlite, and they do sometimes generate their own criticism. The reality is this is not a regulated compound. It's not something that they're required to notify. They did notify DEC. DEC was aware of it. But the reality is we just don't know what the impact is going to be short-term or long-term. And therefore, in the best interest, not only of the people living in Cohoes, but the 170,000 people living in the communities around Cohoes, we believe it's in the best interest that we take a time out, put a ban in place, and down the road, let science be the decider.
DEC is conducting studies to determine if Norlite is violating any regulatory requirements. Norlite said it did not have anyone available to comment. For more on this story, visit WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Well, back again with us this week, the head of UUP. That's Fred Cole, and the union is the United University Professions. And we've been talking about the push from higher education officials to get more money for higher education in the budget. Welcome, Fred.
Great to be here. Thanks, Dave.
Of course, SUNY's all over the state, and legislators have that constituency to consider when they see a Fred Cole walk into their office and and sit down and say, here's our issues and here's what we need. Now, of course, the leadership is important. You've got Andrea Stewart-Cousins, the head of the Senate. You've got Carl Hastie, the head of this New York State Assembly, both Democrats, by the way,
right.
Different houses, and the governor, a Democrat. So how are the negotiations going?
Well, I think that last year, we were able to, for quite some time, we've had a great working relationship with Speaker Hastie, really an unapologetic supporter of SUNY, a great advocate for the educational opportunity program, where he worked for a time when he was at Stony Brook, just a strong, passionate advocate for opportunity for those who have the least resources to get in and then succeed. On the Senate side, of course, there was a transition starting last year. Andrea Stewart-Cousins, you know, basically admitted to us that their agenda was so packed last year. First, a very tough budget, and the reality that they did not want to come in and create the same financial problems that occurred the last time the Democrats were in a majority in the state Senate. They wanted to be responsible stewards of the budget. I get that. Then there was a very extensive social agenda they wanted to take care of, and they did a great job on that. We've worked very closely with Andrea Stewart-Cousins and the leadership in the state Senate, including Senator Toby Stavisky, the chair of the Higher Ed Committee, to really make SUNY issues front and center with the Democrats in the state Senate. We're much more optimistic that we're going to see some funding for SUNY this year out of both houses. We had Senator Andrea Stewart-Cousins at our fall delegate assembly. She spoke to our delegates. We have a good working relationship with her. We're trying to work with her on the revenue side, but also to get some funding into SUNY. And I think we're the three of us, the speaker, leader Stewart-Cousins, and myself, I think that we're on the same page. We've got to move the needle on funding for SUNY. And I think the support is there in both houses. And I think the governor realizes that his long-term legacy, in part, will be defined by what happens in SUNY funding. And hopefully we'll get a decent budget out of that. But I enjoy working with both houses. You know, for a long time, we worked closely with Republicans in the state Senate, and the transition was actually relatively smooth, all things considered. But I enjoy working with the two leaders. They're good advocates for our issues.
And the governor, he takes your calls?
I work with his staff, yeah. We worked very well together on negotiating our last contract. I think the governor understood and does understand the value of the faculty and staff in SUNY, our 37,000 members who really do the great work that SUNY needs in order to be a top-ranked university system in the world. And so I think that I think he gets it. The question is, you know, will he get it enough so that then we can grow SUNY? Because too much of the burden is falling on students right now. And as good a program as Excelsior is, it's not going to take care of the burden issue that is falling on students. We need to get direct state assistance to SUNY and to all of the different kinds of campuses we have. Haven't mentioned the SUNY hospitals. These are public hospitals and attached medical schools. So, you know, there's a lot of areas that need attention.
The SUNY hospitals, I mean, this is a big portion that people don't think about when it comes to SUNY medical care.
Right. And I think it is really easy to miss because you think about SUNY, you think, okay, well, they're universities and they're colleges. So their classrooms, you know, that everybody knows what a college is. But in SUNY, you know, you have three big hospitals, one in Syracuse, one in Brooklyn, one in Stony Brook. They are public hospitals. They have to take every patient who comes through the door. In the case of Syracuse, they provide services that no other upstate hospital will provide, like their burn unit, their poison center. These are really expensive services, but they provide them. Even though they suffer a loss for doing so financially, they do provide those services. But here's a couple things that people don't realize about those hospitals, because you might ask, well, why is SUNY running hospitals? They're not DOH. They're not the Department of Health. Well, the reality is these are teaching hospitals. This is where the next generation of doctors, nurse practitioners, nurses are all being trained for careers in medicine. And what many people don't realize is they may know that we have a nursing shortage or a shortage of nurses coming in and there's high demand for them. But there is also the approaching state and national shortage of physicians. In some places of upstate New York, there are healthcare deserts where you can't find especially a primary care physician. Great concern. It should be a great concern to all New Yorkers. These SUNY hospitals, and then when you include the there's a medical school at the University of Buffalo, doesn't have a hospital, but it is a world-class medical school and one of the largest in the state. Those four medical schools desperately need funding. It is incredibly expensive to do medical education. In the case of the three hospitals, they are linked together with the medical schools. You can't separate the two because of services that are shared, but also financially. The hospitals subsidize the medical schools. Without the hospitals, without that funding, the SUNY cost of the medical schools would go through the roof. But we need those schools because they are training the next generation of healthcare providers. And you know, all the debate about whether we're going to single payer, whether we're staying with Obamacare, whatever the future might be with healthcare, you're going to need doctors. You're going to need primary care physicians. That's why what we're proposing is controlling costs, tuition and fee costs for students, and expanding medical education at those four medical schools. It has to happen. Otherwise, we're going to have real problems in delivering the world quality health care that people need.
Fred Cole, president of UUP, United University Professions. Fred, I thank you so much for taking all this time with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2010, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.